My apologies to the people. I had our theme music turned down. But I did get it at the appropriate volume in the end there. But welcome to another excellent episode of Game Over. I am your host, Simon Pazdor, my faithful squad mate, Adam Pazdor. Adam, Matthew Menier, our third squad mate, is actually auditioning for the lead role in Hamilton in Chicago.
So we wish him all the best.
As always, we wish him all the best, and we hope to see him soon. Although we did hear from him last week. I've heard from him more recently than we've heard from you on air. How about that? Because I hope people enjoyed our Game Over TV Talkers reunion episode, I suppose, where we talked about Game of Thrones last week for a full hour. But speaking of full hours, we got another one today. Yes. So this episode is sponsored by the good people of TV Talkers and technical scheduling conflicts. And so we got another power hour episode of Game Over, which is good because since we've been gone for a couple weeks, boy, there's been just a whack load of stuff.
Yes.
A metric whack load. First of all, you and I got as addicted to a game as we've ever been over the weekend.
Yes, we did.
And which is good because it's fun to get addicted to something with that. Don't take that as a message about anything other than video games. But it's fun to get addicted with people, just doing stuff. Maybe working out could be the thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yes, so we got addicted to a new game called Surviving Mars, which has been on both of our radars for a long time, and then they had a free weekend, and boy, that was just enough to make a sale with us.
Yeah.
And maybe there's other people out there who have tried it too. And there's been a ton of new news on Fire Emblem Three Houses, which I will read off to you later, because I suspect Adam, who likes to stay out of the news cycle, will... let's put it this way. You're generously allowing yourself to be shocked by the reveal of the news on air.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
That's what I'm doing. I'm sacrificing for the good of the show.
So how have you been doing for the past 2 weeks?
Busy. It's kind of thesis crunch time.
Yeah, so, I bet it would be.
Kind of losing this weekend to Surviving Mars was not what I planned. whoops.
It does. I mean, we're going to get into it a bit later, but it does have the unique ability of games to be like, okay, just 5 more minutes, and you look down, it's been 35.
Yeah.
And
you I'm
not saying that hyperbolically. Yeah. I literally did that. I was like, okay, I should go to bed in about 5 minutes. I'm just going to build this one more thing, and then I look down, and it can't possibly have been 40 minutes. It can't.
Yeah.
It can't possibly be 3 in the morning and I work at 8. It can't. That can't be a thing.
I got to tell you, there are a few things more entertaining than sitting and gaming beside someone else when they have to get up in the morning and you don't.
That's twisted that you enjoy that, but I respect it. Yeah, it's been a blast. It's funny because this is the second game that I've gotten addicted to this year, and I can't remember anything being particular. I guess maybe Spider-Man, but it's so nice since if people have been listening to us for a while, they know that we're in the middle of renovations, and so for like a year and a half before, we had to sort of siphon the gaming fix into us in just little bits, you know?
Yeah.
It was very controlled. And now that we're like, my gaming PC is right down there. I could just indulge all I want. And that it was particularly dangerous with Into the Breach because it was mobile. So
yes.
How am I not supposed to play that on my lunch break at work, you know? Anyway, but this I could also play on my lunch break because it runs just fine on my MacBook. How about that? But let's start right there. So Surviving Mars. It had a free weekend this week. I was paying attention to it. I jumped in with 3 hours left to go in the free weekend because it ended at like Saturday at... When did it... No, it ended a week ago, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a week ago.
Yeah, because we've...
Yeah, what, I know.
What is happening to us? So, so it ended a while ago. Man, the time has just kind of dissolved.
Yep.
And, we've been playing a ton of it. But it ended at a weird time, at like 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
Which isn't when weekends end. So I was like, I'm going to go down there and maybe I'll just play enough for the tutorial. That's the word I'm looking for. And then I just kept playing and I figured as long as I don't log off, I won't lose the free weekend status of it.
Right.
And then you wandered into the room and you're like, hey, what are you playing? And I was like, the Surviving Mars game. You're like, that's been on my radar for a while. I'm like, mine too. And then I'm just like, well, you know, it's like 60% off. And I bought your endgame ticket, so there we go. Now this of the season pass, I bought endgame, we're fair and square. What did you know about this game before we jumped into it, though?
Almost nothing. As you know, I'm subscribed to Game Theory, and basically the only two things on that channel anymore are the Game Theory show itself and the science, which I can't do at the proper volume because I would deafen our listeners.
Yeah.
And... to be honest with you, I actually kind of more enjoy the science now as time has gone on.
It's true. I haven't watched a Game Theory video in months.
Yeah, well, he's not doing FNAF anymore, and even though I've never played FNAF, that was when he was at his most entertaining.
Yeah.
But anyway, although there's a new one coming out.
I mean, he's not doing theories, right? Like, it used to be sort of like Mythbusters, but for games, you know?
Yeah.
That's how it started
And
off.
It's still, like, there's a bit of that, but now it's... Anyway, that's we could do a whole show on him.
Indeed.
But no, so I was the most recent, the science video was on the science of surviving Mars and, you know, how to survive Mars and terraform a planet, because that's the new, what the new expansion is, Green Planet?
Green Planet,
Green Planet, yeah, that's what it's called. Anyway, and as it turned out, that episode was sponsored by Paradox, the people who made, or is it Paraxis, whatever it was, Paraxis, something like that.
No, Paraxis is a different company.
It's a different company. I think it was Paradox. Anyway, the people who made Surviving Mars sponsored that episode of The Science. And if you load up Surviving Mars, it's actually one of the links that they have on their load screen, which is kind of cool. Anyway, so that was my entire experience of it. And I looked at it and I was like, this looks like SimCity, but on Mars.
Yeah.
And I went, cool. And then I walked down and I watched the video, obviously. And then I walked down and later and you were playing it. I went, well, maybe that's a sign, you know? And of course, like, we've played games like that before, like you have Prison Architect and I have RimWorld. And it's different in that because you're more now in control of the landscape than you are in either of those games.
Yes. I to me, it's more like SimCity. And it's more like SimCity, was it 2013? I think, was that when that
the new SimCity terrible
came out?
One?
Yeah, the one that kind of started a wave of things where it's like, this is just going to be the name of it. Even though it's a sequel, so we just have to put the year at the end of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like Smash Bros. 2018, because it's just Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Or I guess Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, but yeah, Smash 4 is what we had to call the other one. But yeah, so it reminds me of more of SimCity, but I actually, and you know, periodically, I don't know if you do this, and I don't know if people out there do it on their Steam accounts, is I'll actually go through the feed, you know, where it's like, this is what we recommend you to do, and then sometimes, very rarely will I buy stuff off the recommended page, but oftentimes I'll throw it into the watch list, and then, you know, if anyone's been on this team, you just throw things on the watch list until they go on sale for 70% off. And that's like, sure, I'd pay $2.50 to try this.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? I got spare change rolling around in my pocket somewhere.
Yeah.
And so I had that. I definitely saw it in a recommended feed a while ago, but it had mixed reviews. And usually I go off the reviews, and even if they're mixed, I'll like scroll down and look at them.
Yeah.
And I've tried. I love city building games, and I've tried a bunch of them, but oftentimes if they're early or they're in early, I don't just mean early access, although I do mean that too, but if they're just like early in development, like they might have been released, but indie games a lot of time are very different immediately after release and a year or 2 years into release.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, they probably should have followed the Prison Architect people where they just are in beta for like 7 years.
That's basically what Slay the Spire did,
too. Yeah, and constantly updated until finally when you do release it, it's the proper game that should be released in a lot of these games. And that's the feeling I've kind of gotten from this game. I've looked at some reviews, I watched some old videos, and for the most part, if I'm Googling like, how the heck do I do this thing? I try to avoid videos that are from a year ago because chances are it's different and the stuff they might be complaining about has been patched in.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way it is. So it seems to be very smart that these people got on board with the Game Theorists. I mean, I'm looking at 11.6 million YouTube subscribers on Game Theorists.
Yeah.
That's smart to get in on that crowd, and also smart to them to have a free weekend when you have an expansion pack coming up. It's like, yeah, just try this. You know, if you think that your gameplay loop is addictive enough, and spoilers, this one is, but if you think that your gameplay loop is addictive enough, you know, it's the oldest trick in the book to be like the first hit's free. You know, you can play it for like 12 hours and then see if you can live without it. And by the time it's done and we're going to say, hey, you can't play it anymore, it's 60% off with the expansion pack.
Yeah.
So you can get this, the two expansion packs, because there's one about farming. Apparently you can get a dog. I never saw
a
that.
Dog?
Apparently you can have pets.
Didn't I get the season pass? Don't we have everything?
We do have that, but apparently in the Project Leica or whatever it's called, you can get like pets. I know you can get cows.
Yeah.
Because ranches come from that, but we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So that's, to me, that's genius, what they did. To have it at, be like, hey, it's free. I think more games should do that, honestly. It's the equivalent of having a demo, except the demo is the game. And it's like, there you go. Now you can have it. Brilliant. So, what the heck is this game? First of all, I love The Martian. And if you love The Martian, buy this game. It's just that simple. The Martian is on by Ridley Scott is honestly one I've listened to. I haven't read the book because who does that anymore? I listen to the audiobook naturally. Millennial.
I just read a book.
You just read a book? Well, what do you know? You're at the upper end of the scale of millennial. I'm in my mid-20s struggling to figure out what life's all about. I'm peak millennial.
I got to tell you, I'm 30. I still don't know.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows. I think that's the secret, that we're all just kind of shuffling around trying to figure it out. But I absolutely adore I absolutely adore slash love the book. It's different from the movie. I love them both. The movie a little bit more because I prefer movies. It's that simple. But if you like that kind of stuff, or what I would maybe compare it to is not quite Firefly, but that type of space, you know? Like, if you prefer Firefly to Star Trek, because I think Star Trek is science fiction. Star Wars is science fantasy, you know?
Yes.
It's got,
yes,
like, more wizards, right?
Yes.
So if you're, I mean, I like Star Wars, but if you prefer Firefly to Star Trek, if you like The Martian, the book or the movie a lot, this game is for you. And if you like playing SimCity, this game is really for you.
Yes.
Because basically what it is, it's literally about surviving Mars. So you start off, there's not really a timer. I mean, there's timer in respect to achievements, but we're going to ignore that all apart, yeah, and just tell people the gameplay loop. So you start off, you can scan Mars, you pick a mission sponsor, which will vary a number of things that people out there won't understand unless you've played the game.
Yeah.
But there's just a whole, it's sort of like Civilization, actually, in that you pick a mission sponsor. These people are going to give you money. These people are going to pay different amounts for resources that you ship back to Earth.
Yeah.
You pick a type of person that you are. Do you have a specialist? Are you a psychologist? Are you a businessman? Are you a geologist? What are you? Because you bring skills to the table too.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of outfit your rocket and choose other things like where you're going to land and all that kind of stuff. And then you pick a spot to land, and sure enough, I love watching rockets take off and land.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying. And then after your rocket lands on Mars, you've got nothing. You're just greeted by this fleet of tiny worker drones who are very satisfying to watch work.
Fleet, you only start with like six.
Yeah, you don't start with that many, but you can get more. And then your worker drones just sort of go to work, and your job is to take this brutal, cold, awful red planet. And now with the new DLC that's out, Green Planet, which I would highly recommend people get.
Definitely. I can't imagine.
You're not a big DLC guy.
No,
so that's
I'm
particularly
really not.
Impressive for you to say that this, yeah, DLC is, pun intended, transformative.
Yes.
But the goal of the game is just to survive and start a colony. The goal of the DLC is to turn Mars into a Earth-like planet where people can walk around without spacesuits and enjoy it. And so you have to gather rocks, you have to mine for minerals, you have to find deposits of things. There's various things. There's concrete, metal, rare metal, water. You have to create machines that will make your own oxygen. And what I really like about this game is that pretty much everything you have to do has at least two, sometimes more, solutions.
Yes.
Do you need power? Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to ship a power plant, basically a power plant, yeah, from Earth? It's going to be expensive to ship from Earth, but it's going to be very effective. Do you want to build a wind farm? Maybe you're going to do that somewhere high where you're going to get a lot of wind. Do you want to use solar arrays, but they're only going to work during the day? What do you want to do? There's a lot of ways to get from A to B.
Yes.
And they're right out of the gate, which I really appreciate, because say in SimCity, you start off, it's like, hey, you've pretty much just got one power plant. You're stuck in the rut of, this is what all early cities will look like until you get to such a point where you can develop more.
Yes.
You're constantly free in this game, and I really like that about it. What do you like about the early game specifically?
About the early game? Well, one of the things I'm always worried about when I buy a game like this is that when I start things off, I know I'm going to have no idea what I'm doing. And also, I'm going to have a lot of options available to me, and I'm not going to know what to pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worried when I played through the tutorial, because I played through the whole tutorial before I started my first game. And most of the tutorial, I'm like, I can follow these instructions. I have no concept of what they mean.
Yeah.
And then I got into the game, and I'm like, okay, I got to look through all these menus and like all these build menus and try and decide what I'm doing and when. And I was really worried that I was going to get lost, and I didn't. And that was my favorite thing. It was like, when I knew what I wanted to do, within like two guesses, I knew where it was. And that's really important, is that like a game like this where you spend so much time in the interface, you absolutely need to be able to navigate it quickly and efficiently.
Yeah.
And with the exception of like fuel refineries, which to this day I still couldn't tell you where they are.
in production.
It doesn't feel like they should be for some reason.
Okay.
But anyway, I keep looking in water first. Like the...
Oh, like the life...
Yeah, because you make them out of water.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I always get that wrong the first time.
Yeah.
But basically, I know where everything is, and the way that you get more things is really natural.
Mm-hmm.
Like, first of all, the tech tree is great because, like, it's hidden from you. You can see how long it is, but you don't know what the things are until you find some way of discovering them.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think is a small thing they did, but is brilliant, is that buttons that you don't have the research for, you don't see.
Yeah.
Once you can see the research to unlock it on the tech tree, you can see it on your interface, but you can't click it, obviously, because you don't have it.
Mm.
But that gives you a long primer for, okay, when I research this, this is where this is going to be.
Yeah.
That's a great memory trick, and I really appreciate
it. Yeah,
that.
Absolutely. And then sometimes it's like, oh, why can't I know that? I can just see where that is. Speaking of, because you kind of brought up the tutorial, I thought this was a sneaky, brilliant tutorial. In that same as you, when I put the tutorial, I mean, it's a good chunk of time. It's like 35, 30, 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long tutorial.
Which is smart, though, because by the time you get to the end of the tutorial, you're dealing with stuff that you won't be dealing with for like 4 or 5 hours of game time.
At least.
But it's done in such a way, and the game is quite intuitive, I find, that by the time you do get to that point in the game, you know where it is, and you know what you're doing. It sort of inceptions it into your brain, so it's like, what the heck do I do in that situation? Ah, yes, I've been trained for this, which ironically, probably not intentionally, but ironically, is I guess how they would prepare you for Mars. You know, like when you're going to go, it's like, you might not get this situation ever, but just in case, press this button. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's sort of how it goes, and you're right, there is a tech tree. So yeah. It's sort of like, I don't necessarily want to call it SimCity because I don't think you research stuff in SimCity, although you do unlock things.
Yeah.
So maybe it's kind of similar. But it's a cross between SimCity and it is sort of like a live action Civilization.
Yes.
Is also how it feels. Like if you played Civilization Beyond Earth.
Especially that one.
That one in particular, it's will sort of give you those type of feelings. But the way you develop there is there used to be four, now there's five research trees. There's six, right?
There's engineering, there's
physics, robotics, biology?
No, something like that. Social.
And terraforming.
And terraforming is the new one, and then breakthroughs.
Breakthroughs, oh yeah, line. So yeah. You can, but so breakthroughs aren't guaranteed.
Yeah.
But basically, based on what you can kind of find lying around the map to reveal, and the way that you want to guide it, you can have very different experiences.
Yeah.
And that could not, like, both you and I had the essentially mirrored experiences at the beginning.
Yes.
We went in with what we knew from the tutorial. We got about 100 days in or 100 souls in because this is a love letter to every space movie, TV show.
It really
thing.
Is, yeah.
There's so many references in this game, including to The Martian. There could not be. So you get 100 souls in. And then both of you now are just like, man, based on what I know now, I really wish I could go back and start again. And so we basically said, well, what if we do it? And since we still live together, we said, what if we do it just next to each other and see what happens?
Yeah.
And I thought, this is where I really, truly fell in love with this game. It went from good to magical in that moment. Because you and I, we picked the same mission sponsor. We were the same person. We picked the same landing spot on Mars. Not the same landing site, and then that gives you a 10 by 10 grid. We pick the same spot in that landing site. And our games, pretty much from the point that we touched down on, could not have been more different.
Yeah.
So you had the, what I would say was a more traditional Mars-like experience, where relatively early on, you imported people. I mean, obviously, you could talk about your run.
Yes.
But then I had, I basically did what the game doesn't want you to do, but the fact that the game still lets you do it is, to me, a huge credit. where I had Mars fully terraformed and breathable before a single human stepped foot on Mars. Nobody wears a spacesuit on my Mars. You step down and you breathe my beautiful pure oxygen that I've unfortunately been pumping the atmosphere with greenhouse gases in order to create. It has all these sort of ironic things. But trying to find clever ways to come up with the solutions, it was like a little puzzle. And I love the movie The Martian. At the end, he does the quote. It's like, if you're come with solutions, you just begin. You just figure it out. And this game, it gives you all the tools. I did it one certain way with a breakthrough that I got early on, but I feel confident you could have found a different way.
Yeah.
So this game gives you all the tools to play very differently every single time you play. And that keeps it very fresh. What did you think about sort of the mid-game? And then I do want to talk about terraforming.
Terraforming? Well, I agree with you. I think the thing you have to be careful about is that there is a point at which you can force Mars to do what you want. But especially if you play the way we did with randomized tech trees, which, by the way, after your first game, I fully recommend is the way to go.
Yeah.
There are some things where Mars will just be like, no, you're doing it our way.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that because especially with this. And the second playthrough that we're both on, I guess the third one, technically,
mm-hmm.
Where we went off with very different goals in mind, and I am realizing that Mars may have just told me, no, you're going to lose this one.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm feeling in mind, too. Like, we both played the game and got good at the game in a certain way, and then when we started playing it again, having the feeling that it's just like, I just mastered this. This is going to be a breeze. And then it kicked my butt. And apparently it kicked your butt too.
Yeah.
To play it in a totally different way. It's like we both have, I think, a decent amount of experience playing city building games. We both played like SimCity 2000 back in the day. I've played some other, both played a little bit of Banished. I've played other things kind of like that. I noticed there was a really cool indie city building game that just came out like a few months ago that people are into that I'm now blanking on the name of, but it's like you build things on an island and it's more about creating interesting
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The one of the streamers I watched was playing that.
I wish you could remember the name. Maybe you can Google it while I'm talking.
Yeah, it's like Islands or something?
It might be something like that. And then, of course, there was SimCity, the remake that came out in 2003. I believe it was 2003. Not 2003, 2013. And then a few years ago, the world had the doors blown off of it in the city building sphere by City Skylines. And I also bought a new game called Cities XXL somewhere in there. And that doesn't really matter. But the point was, we have a lot of experience in this genre because it's a long genre. Like, this is a big genre, just building stuff and managing stuff. And they're really two different types of thing. And I if you asked me 6 weeks ago about my city building experience.
Islanders,
there you go. People are high on that game too.
Yeah.
If you asked me 6 weeks ago about my city building experience, I would have given you sort of a shame-filled answer. And now it's pride. And it's shame because I knew, or I thought I knew, maybe I'm getting over my own biases, that Cities Skylines is the better game to SimCity 2013.
Yes.
SimCity 2013 has a lot of flaws. It came out of the gate and people said it has to be online, you know, because it's so huge that you have to, you know, push some of it onto EA servers. That was garbage because EA is garbage. Now you can play it offline.
Yeah.
It basically, the maps are far too small and you're going to get to a point in every single map where you're going to wish you could expand.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of problems. And it gets to the point where you're playing SimCity and you sort of like, this city's done. Like, there's nothing else I can do and you can't even really do anything on one plot of land. It's got a lot of flaws.
Yeah.
Then Cities Skylines comes out from a much smaller, I believe, European team, so not EA. And it's the answer to everything. And every video that I've watched from every YouTuber who played SimCity was like, this game is Jesus Christ incarnate. It's got everything you could want. The map is huge. The engine's perfect. It's got more things than you could ever feasibly think you could need. It's got every demographic. It's got every graph. It's got every this. It's got every that. You can have things down to the point where you can not allow pets in this apartment complex if you really want to.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would do that because
actually.
But like, you can do insane stuff like that. And so I bought it. I played it for maybe an hour and a half. And for that game came out in what, like 2016, 2015?
Something like that.
So let's say 2015 for fun. So for 4 years now, I've been saying when I have time, I will go back to play Cities Skylines. It's time for me to admit that I'm not going to go back and play Cities Skylines.
2015,
I was right. So for 4 years, I literally have been saying that. But I've never gone back because I thought it would take like an unwieldy amount of time to understand all the math of that game and really get good. And I downloaded a city that someone already built just to look around at what was possible.
Yeah.
And someone recreated the entirety of Los Santos from GTA 5. Flying around that city was magical. It was insane what these people did. It's kind of like Minecraft. But that ain't ever going to be me. And so I kind of thought that was maybe I'm just terrible at this genre of game. And it's just not for me, even though I kind of like dipping my toes in the water.
Yeah.
Like how I like to play first-person shooters, but with bots, so I still feel like I'm good. I don't like playing against people because they're just going to beat me. I'm just not good at those games. It's okay. And then Surviving Mars comes out. And I'm good at this game. And I feel good about myself again. And I'm back on the train. It wasn't me. It was that type of game. And I think it's this. After this long rant that I've had, I think the difference is this. City Skylines sort of has a constantly evolving arc. Or the longer you play, the more fires you have to put out. Because it's never really done. Yeah. You should always have something you can do, something you can fiddle with, something you can tweak. And you're always sort of going to be, at least in my experience, at the verge of... I need to keep on top of things because this ball is rolling,
yeah,
and I need to keep going. Surviving Mars was a very different experience. You have an early, when you first land on Mars, I'm graphing it for you, but you've already seen me talk about this, and the people out there can't see me, but bear with me. But you land on Mars, and it's pretty easy early on because there's nothing to stop you.
Yeah.
And then you realize, I need to get back to Earth. I need to get all these resources in order. I need to get advanced resources. And then for a while there, it's pretty difficult. Because you have a lot of fires to put out, a lot of your buildings need maintenance, you haven't done this planning, blah, 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 blah. But eventually, you start to get the hang of it, you might get colonists on Mars, you start to get a hang of getting advanced resources, you start to unlock some really cool technologies, blah, 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 blah. And then you kind of can plateau. And you can sit there for a while, like for the end of the game. Like you and I sat there, we probably reached that point in your successful playthrough, what, halfway through?
Something like that, yeah.
Like halfway to two-thirds. And so we had a lot of the game to play where it's like, I have some contingency in place for everything that could go wrong.
Yeah.
And that, in some games, that might be boring, but because in this one, you constantly have an end goal. Like, maybe in before the expansion pack, it would have been boring. But this time, it's like, I can, now I don't have to worry about maintaining this wind farm. I can concentrate on, how the heck am I going to terraform a planet?
Yeah.
And your goals shift, and you feel mastery. And any game, I talked about this with Into the Breach 2 relatively recently, any game that can make me feel mastery, I'm not good at a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm good at some things, but there's most things out there I'm not good at.
I think that's true for everybody.
It is. It's a very safe statement. Most things out there I'm not good at. So if a game can let me spend like 8-10 hours with it, and then it gives me the feeling of, you're really good at this game.
Yeah.
That's very good.
And then you start a second playthrough and you realize, oh, no, I'm not very good at this type of game.
Which is also, I mean, it would be a big deal if you started the second playthrough and all of a sudden it was a breeze.
Yeah.
That wouldn't necessarily be interesting either. The fact that we started the second playthrough, it's kind of like starting a new Dark Souls game. It's like, or getting Sekiro. It's like, oh, no, I still do suck at this.
Yeah.
I just kind of got good with that one playthrough that I was doing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you could terraform Mars. But so what do you think of, I swear to God, we're going to talk about terraform in a second, but like the late game when you finally feel like, because I don't want to talk about my addiction experience. You were sitting there right next to me as addicted as I was.
Yes, I was the whole time. And it was, some parts of it were frustrating. I understand why the mods were in there to try and improve the AI, although you were playing with them for a while and didn't seem to notice a difference.
I played with them on my unsuccessful playthrough, and I didn't play with them again.
Yeah. So there are some bits of it that are really frustrating, but I think... But the basic gameplay loop is still very, very satisfying. Because everything you do, you can sort of... See, you have the sort of what's next, right? Is... you have the, I need to gather metals. Well, why do I need to gather metals? Because I need to build stuff out of metals, and also I can make metals into machine parts, which I'm going to need for late game stuff.
Yeah.
And so that that loop of it's very convenient. The thing that I find really frustrating, actually not in the mid game, but I forgot to mention this in the early game, is that your landing spot can be very, like, can just tell the story of your game, because they only reveal one square to you.
Yeah.
And in my second playthrough, I started with two probes. So I just point on two spots on the map, and I'm like, okay, did I find a better one? And really, if you don't start near water, mm-hmm. you're in trouble.
Yeah, you better search for water.
And so what I ended up doing, as you know, in my most recent one, is I landed somewhere, and then 2 hours in, I'm like, okay, pack everything up. We're moving across the map to this other place I found with water.
Yeah. So you see that as a negative.
I see that as a negative in the sense that I don't, especially if you're playing with rival colonies, which we haven't even talked about.
Yeah.
But that was a huge setback for me. I essentially had to start over.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's just kind of luck of the draw. And part of me is going, it's like when you're playing Civilization, the temptation is there if you spawn in on a map and there's no resources around, you're just like, okay, I'll just restart until I get something that's possible.
Yeah. Same scumming, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't usually approve of same scumming unless you're playing XCOM, in which case it's the only way.
Yeah.
Or
the game that we're talking about later, Fire Emblem.
Yes.
Random crits.
Yeah, exactly. Just screw with you. But, yeah, so I don't like that aspect of it, but at the same time, I don't know how I'd fix it.
See, it's weird. I actually, now to be fair, I haven't done it to the same extent that you did, but when I played a game on my laptop just to see if it was possible to run it on a non-gaming PC, and the settings for the graphics had to absolutely take a hit.
Yeah.
But it did run smoothly. It just runs smoothly, kind of grainy, but that's fine. Mars is grainy. It's got a lot of sand. But I kind of like that you're playing, like, in no other city building would you be like, this didn't work, time to pack up and drive over there. Like, you could never do that, and you can't even really do it once you have colonists down. But this game basically has two halves, and there's an early and late game, so to speak, but
yeah.
It also has the two halves in that you have your machine problems, and then you have people. And once you have people, you have to kind of worry about babysitting and making sure that they're doing okay, and that they want to breed, and all that other good stuff that's necessary to colonize Mars. Yeah. But for the most part, if you just have your machines there, you can move around, and it's going to sound really basic, but a thing that I truly, deeply believe sets this game apart from other city builders is Earth. And that's weird to say about a game called Surviving Mars.
Yes.
But the fact is, one of the best advice that I read on the Surviving Mars Reddit page was, do not strive for, what's the word I'm looking for, self-sufficiency?
Yeah.
There's a specific word for it. Self-sufficiency.
I had
the word.
Yeah.
Do not strive to be self-sufficient. Strive to be profitable. And that's because in every other city builder, in SimCity and City Skylines or whatever, you have to provide your own power because no one else is going to provide it for you. You have to provide your own resources, blah, blah, blah. So if you can't get something, you need to figure out a way to get it. And this one, I mean, there might be ways to buy things, but that's fine. But in this one, if you get into trouble, like, I got into a gameplay loop where I didn't have a lot of things when I was playing my entirely mechanized Mars experience.
Yes.
I could not make all of the necessary resources for the late game, but I was making so much money from automated mining that I could buy it from Earth no problem. So the fact that you have, like, you're not just stranded on this ship, you get to call things from Earth, and it's very satisfying when you're, like, struggling. You're like, man, I all my power plants are going down. I need a bunch of electronics. Please, Earth, save me. And then when that rocket lands, and it gets a beautiful animation when it lands, shark-shaped rocket, and you can just see, like, 80 drones that were dormant until there all swarm the rocket to rip all of the stuff out of it.
Yeah.
It's very satisfying. And I think that's a good twist to be like, you're not alone. I mean, you are alone because you're in space, but you're not alone. This is sort of a united effort.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Earth makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so interesting to do what you did and pick the option where you can only have one rocket.
Yeah, so there's also a bunch of gameplay loot. You can just add gameplay features. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. Some of them are basically cheats because they disable achievements. But I did one where it was like the last rocket leaving Earth. Like after this, it's like Wall-E. Everyone's dead on Earth. Everyone's in space. You got one rocket of 12 people. Although through random events, I got another rocket from space. They were just adrift. And I was like, yeah, land here.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was so you can have a lot of little, and that's another theme that I love in games is creating my own stories within the game.
Yeah,
this is just perfect for it. You could come up with your own little storyline so easily.
Yeah, and the random events, random events are really good. They change up the playthroughs, and the way the breakthroughs work are great.
Yeah,
breakthroughs are just random sciences that, and you like sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't, and like. The reason Simon could do a mostly automated playthrough was because he got a breakthrough very early on that said, I don't need people to work my...
Rare metals.
Your rare
mines.
Yeah, rare metal.
Which is how you make money.
Yeah. So I did not get that, and thus I could not do that. so I had to bring people in. But I forgot what I was going with that.
But it is good, though, that you could start a playthrough and tend to play one way, and just be the way the game is shaped, you're just like, this new path is open to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go down and see what happens.
Well, and that's what I was talking about earlier, where sometimes Mars will just be like, yeah, that thing you wanted to do, no, the random generator says that's not an option.
Yeah.
Like, if you had started that game intending to do that, and that hadn't happened,
that would have been real trouble.
You would have been in big trouble.
Yeah.
But no, the if I had to come up with a big criticism, I don't like the mystery thing.
Yes. Interesting. So, you can pick a mystery at the beginning or you can do a random thing. And basically, very similar to Civilization, every once in a while something will pop up and it'll be like, you have to deal with this. Pick one of these, like, three options and then here's what's going to happen.
And they're all supposed to be telling a kind of like supernatural-ish storyline.
Yeah.
And mostly I just found them annoying. I'm like, yeah, just let me get, I'll get this out of the way. I got stuff to do. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the mysteries are supposed to be there to, you know, spice up the gameplay loop. And maybe for people who have put 500 hours into this game and know everything there is to do and have all the achievements, maybe they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody, like if you're just starting out, my advice, just turn it off.
Yeah, feel free to not put the mystery. I also do think, because what we're going to talk about next, I think that it's good that there you can turn off terraforming too. Because if you just want to play, if you're just like, I don't want to turn to Earth. I like Mars the way Mars is. And I want to play Surviving Mars to create the ultimate Martian colony. And they should live in bubbles. And that's the aesthetic I'm going for. You can turn terraforming off.
Yeah.
But maybe, I don't know how much is in the DLC that would not be there. But the DLC is quite fun. Regardless. So there's terraforming now,
yes,
which is beautiful in that I feel like this was probably a complete game before, considering how much it costs, about $20.
Yeah.
And then terraforming basically gives it a new end game.
Yes.
So you have, first of all, it's got its own brand new tech tree, but also it gives you 4 meters at the top of your screen. You get atmosphere, temperature, water, and vegetation. And in theory, you're in fully terraformed when all of them get to 100%.
Yes.
And you have different ways to do it. Like for the atmosphere, you can shoot magnetic shields into the atmosphere to start to create one because Mars doesn't really have an atmosphere. You can use release greenhouse gases to try and warm the planet. There are things you can do to try and warm the planet's core. For water, you can seed clouds, which is basically trying to make clouds grow on Mars, particularly once the temperature warms up a bit, like they're all very connected.
Yes.
Then you can actually get liquid water forming on Earth, but that can cause new problems. You could have acid rain. You could have Mars quakes. There are disasters, like there should be in any good city-building game. And then you can basically... the one problem was with vegetation. First of all, you can shoot like seeds on this little generator to start growing plants. But then eventually you do have to send rockets around the planet to be like, put seeds elsewhere. This is just one colony.
And that, the only complaint I have about the terraforming, like, almost, it's excellently done.
Yeah.
Actually, I have two complaints about the terraforming. The first one is, I got an achievement that said, congratulations, you have now raised your water and temperature and whatever levels to the point where you'll no longer get acid rain.
Mm-hmm.
The next day I got acid rain.
Yeah.
So it lies to you a little. But the other big one is for all of the other ones, for atmosphere, for water, and for temperature, there is stuff you can proactively do with buildings you can unlock that will raise it to 100%. Yeah. You do get expeditions that you have to send rockets on that will give you jump starts, but you can get from 0 to 100 just on the ground. For vegetation, once you hit 40, you can do nothing on the ground.
Which is, it is frustrating.
Yeah. And I'm like, yes, I realize I have to spread seeds to other parts of the planet, but let me do something down here.
Yeah. Or let, like, or make it so the expeditions don't have a timer on when they'll reappear. Yeah. Because, like, I vastly enjoyed most of my terraforming experience watching your little slice of Mars turn more Earth-like and more green and have liquid water is very fun. And then sort of zooming out, you can get a planetary view as well, and watching that Mars slowly churn and get lakes and oceans and continents.
Yeah.
That's all very satisfying. But the fact that there's like a 10-minute timer on when you can do the one particular thing to get vegetation is very frustrating. It's like, I just finished it. I know where to go. Just let me go again.
Yeah.
But other than that, you're right, you said, you can just basically build these super powerful buildings. And this was another thing that I thought was really cool, too. I like in city building games or Civilization, you know, like this type of games. Not, this isn't quite a 4X, you know, explore, expand, whatever it's called. But it's sort of similar. It's like 4X adjacent. It's like maybe like 4W, you know? Yeah. It doesn't literally stand for something, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
But I do like how it gets to a point where you can create stuff that sort of blurs the line of science. Like, could this exist one day? It's not fully science fiction, so it might exist someday, but it's still insane.
Yeah.
And I still kind of enjoyed building that kind of stuff. Like, just a hole into the center of Mars that would slowly pull up everything you're going to need just very slowly. I found those very satisfying.
Well, and what I found frustrating was that they sort of picked and chose with them. Like, the mole, as you were describing, once you have this, if you're willing to wait, you never have to worry about metals or rare metals again.
Yeah.
Which is good, because the deposits on the surface you can access are finite.
Yeah.
Once you have the artificial sun, you never have to worry about power ever again. And that's... And then you can do another one for concrete, but by the end of the game, you already have more concrete than you could ever possibly use.
I didn't get that one entirely. Like, I didn't understand why at that point you would need it. It might make sense to be, like, earlier on.
Yeah.
But it was weird, like, for an end game thing just to give you concrete, but whatever. Yeah.
But then there's nothing for water. There's no sort of... Especially, like, there's, you cause rain, and then you have no ability to harness it to water your colony.
Yeah, you might think that... it does improve soil quality, but it doesn't, like... populate lakes.
And I guess they don't need one for oxygen, because the theory is once you raise the atmosphere up enough, you eliminate your need to generate oxygen.
So what I think they do for water is once you have enough water in the atmosphere that it's raining, you can use your water evaporators, and they'll be extremely effective.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Now, there are a lot of things like...
Moisture evaporators.
Yeah, moisture evaporators, where it's basically early on, they don't do much because there's no moisture on Mars, but they get an insane bonus once you're terraformed to the point where it's like, yeah, there's plenty of water around. I'm just going to grab...
So that would explain why I was still running out in late game, because I had none of them.
Yeah.
I was doing it all off ground deposits.
Yeah, no, and I found a couple of, like... enormous underground lakes that I was able to harvest into. But that's actually a good example of what this game does really right. Like, you might get to a point, and both of us did separately in our playthroughs, where it's just like, I have no idea how the heck I'm going to do this. How do I solve this problem? The fact that my water supply and my power is halfway across the map compared to where my rockets are landing, where my storage is. And it's like, we got tunnels. And tunnels are basically, they'll teleport you wherever you want to go. But that's just an example.
Yeah.
For the most part, if it's just like, how the heck do I do this? Oh, they thought of it.
Yeah.
There wasn't really something that I got to the point where I'm like, man, there's just no, except for the vegetation one, I guess. Yeah. I had to come up with one. But for the most part, if I needed to do something, there was more than one way to do it. This is a very well thought out game.
Yes, it is. And I like your ability to terraform on a local scale, the landscape, with the ability to flatten and build ramps and stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so as much as I do want to keep talking about Surviving Mars, and we probably will because it's just fantastic, we'll probably have an update about it another day, we do need to talk about the Fire Emblem news.
Yes.
But before we do that, because we have an extra long show here, we're actually going to play a quick commercial. We've got to pay some bills, but we'll be back in 1 minute. Stay tuned. That's right. We're still here. We're here for the second or the third quarter. I didn't really time that very well. the third quarter of Game Over. Yeah, that's right. There's no TV Talkers this week. They should be returning next week. But it's a full hour of Game Over. And listen to our podcast if you want to hear what we just talked about, Surviving Mars. Not a new game. It's been out for a little over a year. But a game that had a brand new expansion pack and is no longer on sale on Steam. So unfortunately, you have to get it full price. But support indie developers. It's a good game. It's well made.
Yeah.
And if you want to pay full price for it, you will get your money's worth. If you go on the indie game mantra, which you probably shouldn't, but I do anyway, of $1 an hour, you'll easily get your money's worth on this game. Easily. Yeah. It will eat up your time like nobody's business. Okay. So there's been quite a bit of Fire Emblem Three Houses news. And actually, first of all, before I talk about Fire Emblem Three Houses news, I want to talk about a little bit of Game Over news. So it's been sort of a progressive progression. That's the way progressions work. They progress.
Yes.
Of us getting our podcast onto multiple websites. I sort of released a test episode when we still had Matt in here, God bless his soul. And I said a few weeks ago that I was going to try to do it, and then a few more weeks ago I said I was going to do it, and then I said I was awaiting approval, and then I said I got approval, but I hadn't seen it. So finally we're at the end of the road. I've seen it. It's up for you can find us on Apple Music, and you can find us on Google Podcasts. I know, before you get at me, we haven't heard anything from Spotify yet. I don't know if I can resubmit or if they're just like waiting, if it's in the pending stage or something. Maybe they want me to upload like 5 episodes before they do it.
Maybe.
Who knows? So, but the point of the matter is, we are on those sites. We're not big, obviously, since we're just starting out, so it might be hard to find us. Because turns out the name Game Over is very generic. So what I'm going to be doing is find us on Facebook. It's Game Over UMFM. First of all, like us because it makes us feel good. And I'm going to post a link to our Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts link. Post a link to the link. I'm just going to post the link so you can find us. Click there, click subscribe, and you'll get updates with what we have. Currently, we only have that one episode, and it's a few weeks old because, of course, I left for a couple weeks, and then I think we came back for 1 week, took a week off, and here we are. So we're going to be uploading a little bit more. And because we are not bound strictly by what we have to talk about at University Radio here, stay tuned to that page for new and interesting developments that we can't exactly do on air from university. Matt and I have a couple things roaming around that we have a couple plans for doing something big, not directly video game related, but still some type of game related. And maybe, Adam, that'll be the space where you finally do your board game podcast. Who knows? But either way, subscribe to us there. Like us on Facebook. You can find us wherever you want to find us. And I think that's all the housekeeping I need to do. So now we can fanboy about Fire Emblem.
Yes.
So, boy, it feels like there hasn't been a lot of information about this.
No.
You know? Like, this game was announced, two? God, time really flies. I feel like this game was announced in 2017, and then in 2018 we saw a trailer, and then just earlier this year we saw a little bit more of a trailer. Like in 2018 we saw that very mysterious 2-minute trailer where we had no idea who was what, and someone looked like a dragon and we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And now we know a little bit more, but lately stuff has really been kicking off. So it all came from this Famitsu, which is a Japanese magazine, or a Japanese website magazine. It all came from a Famitsu article. So I'm just going to be reading some of the stuff to you, because unfortunately, since it's in Japanese, there's been a lot of people who translated and made YouTube videos about it, but I can't exactly just read the YouTube video to you.
No.
So I have to read off this this website here. So, number one, the world background of Seiros. The Seiros religion, which has roots in the continent of Fodlan, was founded by the Saint Seiros. He was the one who defeated the Liberator King Nemesis in the heroic war a long time ago. He's also said to have constructed the Adrestian Empire. That's just like, could you get a more Fire Emblem classical fantasy paragraph than that? So there's going to be a religion founded by a guy who is like super good in the past, and it's probably going to be evil later. What's interesting is that there are there's crests, there's greater and lesser crests, and earlier I thought there's going to be like 3 crests and maybe like they might be an imprint on you. It seems like they're a physical thing.
Okay.
They're not just like a magical thing or like a, you know, what was it, an awakening? The Fire Emblem was like a shield?
Yeah, it was a shield.
It doesn't seem like it's that, because characters have crests. So some characters have lesser crests. A lot of them do, in fact. And then few characters, like your character, Byleth, have greater crests. And they also are tied to personal skills. So those are back. Byleth and the other three main protagonists, the head of the houses, they all have skills that basically increase their character XP.
Okay.
And each other, I'm sure they'll announce more later, but other characters have their own personal skills that kind of change the way they play. Who knows? That's, I think, a very popular feature. Was pretty much a slam dunk to return, but just give a quick thought on that while I look up something else.
Well, I mean, yeah. There's your quick thought. Yeah. It's so, even with how, like, that's not very much to go on.
No.
And it kind of depends on how it sort of fits into the, for lack of a better word, the gameplay loop of Fire Emblem.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and that's the thing I'm sort of interested to talk about, because you kind of gave me a bit of information about how that's supposed to work. And it sounds like it's going to be very different from every other Fire Emblem game.
Yeah.
If that's true.
It sounds like it's going to be pretty similar to, I have the next thing. It sounds like it's going to be pretty similar to, like, a combination. Harry Potter is still heavily in the mix.
Yeah.
But it is going to be, especially when I'm about to read, kind of similar to Echo Shadows of Valentia, which is interesting. They are switching up the formula, which I appreciate. I love the classical battles between, like, famous medieval forces. But I'm replaying Radiant Dawn right now, and I can get it there. Like, I would love it if they did it again and it was great, but I don't blame them for switching it up. Here's the first bit of sort of new, we kind of already figured it out, but new information. So, the following classes are available upon promotion for unit after they reach level 10. They have to require, they will have to pass an intermittent exam. So basically, they write an exam and then they can promote into a class at level 10. Sort of like how the villagers could in Echoes. There's Mercenary, excels in power and speed, easier them to improve sword and axe abilities. Cavalier, a well-balanced class that can perform hit-and-away strategies. They have the class skill Move Again. Kanto from the Tellia series returning. Yeah. That's huge. Brigand, high HP and power in addition to axe. They can also use gauntlets. That sounds fun.
Okay.
Gladiator, a male-only class. They can take down some enemies with quick gauntlet attacks. I'm pretty sure gauntlets are the barehanded fighting.
Yeah.
And literally their class skill is barehanded fighting, can perform melee attacks even when not equipped with any weapons. So gauntlets are like fist weapons, but these guys, even if they have nothing, they can punch somebody like the Tellius, the Laguz.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Mages. I'm totally not entirely sure about this one. Able to use magic that can easily hit enemies even with high defense. Their class skill is fire, allows them to use fire, and if they are already able to, they can use fire twice. Not totally sure what that means.
Okay.
But we're going off RPGsite.net and their translation, so it might just be a thing that gets lost in translation. It's going to be more clear when we get some English news.
Yes.
And by the way, if you're interested, because I know people are, especially on the Reddit page, there has been a large chunk of information about each individual character. So we have, like, mini paragraph-long backstories about a lot of the characters that are in each house.
Okay, that's good.
So we're not going to go through that on air because you can't look at them.
Yes.
But if people are interested in, like, who am I going to be playing, I mean, that's going to choose. Yes. There's a rumor, hint, leak, whatever it is going around out there, that basically you pick one house and you're stuck with that house for the rest of the game. But what the leak says is you can recruit someone from another house, but not the leader.
Right.
So whoever you pick at whatever the midpoint is where the thing switches, you're stuck.
Yeah.
So you better know who you're going with, and you better like everybody in that
house
because you're going to be stuck with them. Which also means a lot of replayability, which I'm kind of into. So what do you think of all those classes and kind of the class skills? That's not exactly the standard ones, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. And I'm interested to see it. I'm okay with them switching it up a little. I was kind of getting a little bored of the usual run of things, and I'm very interested to see just like what they do with it, and how that midpoint choosing thing is going to work.
Ready for some brand new news?
Yes.
Battalions. We saw these are like the mini NPCs running around behind you.
Yeah.
So apparently battalions are recruited from the Knights Guild, so you actually buy them and they go with you into battle. Each battalion type offers a stat change to the unit. Be advised, these are not only buffs, but some come with nerfs and a stratagem to be used by the unit. We'll get to stratagems in a second. Battalions also have their own levels, health, and EXP to be gained. But as the unit takes damage in battles, some of the soldiers in the battalion will get attacked and fall down. Battalion's overall HP is noted with a war power point. When it reaches zero, the unit loses all of their soldiers, including the stat change and stratagems. So there you go. So you basically buy a squad to come with you into battle.
Okay, that's interesting. That's not how I thought they were going to do that.
Me neither. Right. Yeah. I thought every character had one, but you have to buy them. I actually prefer this. It's like, yeah, you could use them to sort of bolster a weak unit.
Yeah.
Get them like a strong bodyguard force. But if you think someone's good enough on their own, don't bother spending the money.
Yeah.
Exactly. I like that a lot.
That makes sense.
Now, I was just talking about stratagems. What the heck is a stratagem? A new feature that can be used by units who have battalions into them. The effects will vary from attacking enemies to supporting allies. Offensive stratagems in particular have a special effect to cause unrest to the attack units, in which they can neither move nor use stratagems, and having their knight stat changed nullifies as well as getting the... I don't totally understand what that means. Maybe it's a translation thing. So then they have a whole bunch of different things here. The simultaneous lance strike, used by lance soldiers, attacks the target with enemies, obviously. Godspeed provision, used by the monk unit, increase allied units' movement by 5 for that turn. Also applies to adjacent units. Inducement ploy, used by foot soldiers, attacks adjacent enemy and force them to move to the other side of the acting unit.
Okay.
Fire ploy, used by cavalry unit, after attacking, turns certain terrains within range into flames. Group magic, fire, launches fire magic to the target and hits adjacent spots.
Okay.
So there's going to be a lot of different ways to play.
Yeah.
So you can have... Yeah, like, I don't know if you have to equip your mages with mages, or if you can have, like, a mage battalion be supporting a knight.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
I'm loving the variety in this game so far. Absolutely adoring it. Now, there's also new commands and martial arts. So basically, you can have gauntlets, and you can have different commands to use to your units, but there's still a lot of stuff, and those are basically exactly what they sound like. We're moving on. The Academy works thusly. You're going to have weekdays and weekends. So during the weekdays, you do personal tutoring. You can also do auto-tutoring, group tasks, and set goals for your students.
Right.
So you being a professor is a big deal in this game.
Yeah.
And then on weekends, you can have free activities. You can go for a walk. You can train. You can have parties. You can rest. And you can write qualification exams. You can also personally tutor people. So if someone's not good in something, you can make them great. If they're not good in something, you can give them a proficiency. You can kind of manipulate the characters the way you want them to. Very, very interesting. You guide people. They'll ask you questions like, what do you think about this? You answer them. You can sort of massage them in different directions that way. You can set goals. You can have group tasks. It sounds like being a professor is a huge part of this game, a huge gameplay mechanic. I am all aboard that hype train.
Yes, me too. It sounds like the two halves of this game are going to be totally different.
It almost sounds like XCOM. So what they say, I think it was in the reveal and not the leak, but again, this is a wall of text that I'm looking at. But at the end of every month, that's when you have a fight.
Right.
Yeah, so it's 30 days. Okay, and it's 30 days in a calendar month and 12 months in a year, so basically our standard calendar. So you have like a month where you train and do everything. At the end of that, you have a fight.
Right.
But so it does sound like XCOM, where it's like you have your downtime, you have your on time, and they're very different.
Yeah.
Fire Emblem has always had that situation, but it used to be mostly fights and a little bit of downtime. They experimented with it in Fates, where they had more downtime. I didn't think it succeeded very well.
Yeah.
Clearly, that was something that they were like, we need to make this great, because people like these characters, let's give them more time.
Yes.
I love, love everything I've heard about this. What do you think?
Yep, I'm totally on board with this. I think it sounds great. I really like the idea of more downtime, more ways to explore these characters. Because, like, we fell in love with Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, and all they had were, like, handfuls of conversations in the sort of mission-based screen.
Yeah.
So the ability to interact with everyone on a more permanent basis is really appealing.
You know what? I think this is a weird thing, but my number one hope, and I'm not going to say it's, like, good story, good character, like, obviously.
Yeah.
What I want is big battles. Like, I played Awakening and Fates relatively recently, and that's like you're like 16 guys against like 20.
Yeah.
And it's not that big of a deal. I just did a map. I'm at part 3 end game in Path of Radiance. That's currently where I am. And it's like you have 16 guys. You're supported by 4 hawks over here and 8 lions over there, and you're going up against 86 guys and the map is enormous. I love that. It makes battles feel huge.
Yeah.
So make the battles feel huge.
Yes.
That's like my number one thing. I really like it. It's not just like there's our guys, there's their guys. It's a car crash. We'll see who wins. See you in 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually strategy. I like that. What's, if you had to boil it down to one thing in our final minute here, what would you pick?
One thing that I want out of this one. I think the most important thing, because I already know I'm not going to get my favorite thing, because there is sort of a custom protagonist character.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like you can change them.
Yeah. But the one thing is we need